team of the modern era.
This is AFL Exchange on afl.com.au.
Across Australia and around the world, welcome to the Round 12 edition of AFL Exchange. I'm Matt Thompson. Drew Petrie is here, superstar from the North Melbourne Football Club. Hello, Drew.
Hello, Matt.
Good to see you. And Peter Ryan is here for Andrew Lowther, who is on assignment in the City of Churches. Is that being generous?
He's going over to watch the Mighty Hawks take on Adelaide.
Great Thursday night football.
Thursday night footy.
Mm. How good is Thursday night football? I wish we had it every week.
Really? I think it detracts from Friday night football.
Really?
Yeah. Because Friday night is typically the first game of the week.
Yeah,
and when there's a Thursday night game, well, it's not anymore.
I'm excited about both games.
Yeah, I reckon it's great.
Gives you something to watch when you get home from work.
I think it's fantastic.
Middle-aged blokes like me love it.
Yeah, okay.
It's really good. The only people it's not good for is for the footy show on Channel 9.
No, that's true.
They are struggling the ratings big time
they
on
are,
Wednesdays.
The footy show.
Oh, on Wednesdays. When they move to Wednesdays, They typically don't have as many people watching.
Mm.
Because people actually like watching the game on the Thursday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels too early on a Wednesday to be watching the footy show.
It does a bit. Righto, there's lots to talk about. So much to talk about from this week. We've got some controversial topics coming up. We're going to get into the fan survey as well a little bit later. We'll get Petrie's point, coaching from the boundary versus coaching from the coach's box. Person of the week, big week four, that's all to come. But we want to start with Shane Mumford. When this news broke on Tuesday, it went around the AFL.com.au newsroom like wildfire. Everyone was saying, is this like Ablett for the Suns? Is Mumford Ablett for the Giants, I guess? It's a big out.
It is. Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, it is. You're right. I was at the game on Sunday when he hobbled off. Pete, I'm not sure if you were there as
there.
Well. You were there as well. Covering the
story, or
as a spectator?
I was there with my son.
Yeah, very nice. So, when he hobbled off, it didn't look too serious because he was able to, because I saw him get injured and then he was down and got up and then competed in the next ruck contest and then looked across the bench and jogged off or hobbled off.
My impression was that they thought, the game's shot. Let's get him off and get him ready for next week.
And then when he walked off the ground at the end, he had an ice pack on it but managed to walk without crutches or anything.
Yeah, I think, ankle reconstruction, they've obviously had a look at it and thought, this is much worse than we initially thought. Because even as late as Monday, GWS was still thinking it was a chance to play at least after the bye.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's huge. They lost him for 7 games last season, and they did not win one of them. So he is a huge loss. And even when I saw the Bulldogs GWS game and Mumford was beaten that day by Minson and Roughhead, and they didn't fire a shot. So he's crucial.
Yeah, he is. And whether he's absence for the remainder of the year puts their finals hopes on the line, but like solely just him, I think the fact that you've got Davis who's going to miss a little bit too now and Patful.
Yeah, you don't want to lose key defenders, do you?
Yeah, exactly.
And Cornelio's out the next 3 weeks as well. I mean, it's just, it was a really big toll from that game.
Yeah, shocking. It was carnage in the second half and it cost them the game or any chance of winning that game against Collingwood. The only thing is they've got a lot of talent in this seconds, which we sort of focused on a couple of weeks ago. So it'll be good to see, for his pure spectacle point of view, it'll be good to see those blokes get a run.
Mm.
And they've still got a damn good midfield.
Yeah, they have.
They'll challenge North Melbourne.
Yeah, we went through there with some opposition stuff during the week, and they've got 17 first-round draft picks playing this weekend.
That's crazy.
So there's a talent pool there still.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that when we get to the game previews coming up a little later on this edition of AFL Exchange. A more broader point about injuries, though, Pete Ryan, for you and I guess Drew can give us a club's perspective on this.
Yeah.
I'm concerned that the clubs are becoming less transparent, if it's possible, less transparent when it comes to their injury lists. I mean, why did it take us until Tuesday lunchtime, or a little bit later, to find out the extent of the carnage at the GWS Giants?
The process would be scans, so to be fair, they have to wait the scans, and sometimes they have to wait for the doctors. Remember, the doctors aren't full-time, so they have to wait until they're available.
Yeah, you're right.
There is a possibility you can wait, and then there's also the clubs now do want to release them themselves, which is another factor labelled in, but it can take a couple of days.
Well, I think that's the problem. The clubs are holding on to the information because they want to release it themselves.
Yeah, on their own websites?
Yeah.
Are you worried that there's the longer it takes, that the more agencies might get a hold of it, the more news?
No, I'm not concerned about that. I just want to know. I think the fans have a right to know as soon as possible.
So the GW, they played Sunday afternoon. They'd get back to Sydney Sunday night. Monday, they'd be scanned. Then from the scans, the doctors have a look, the physios would have a look. then if a surgeon needs to have a look, they'd need to have a look. That might not happen till Tuesday morning. And then, so I can understand why it might take. It's not, like we do have the best of everything. We get our scans done straight away. We get appointments with surgeons straight away. But that might take a 24-hour period for it to happen.
I think perhaps there should be some kind of process where we get more information the morning after the game.
Yeah, it has become...
Because that's how it used to be. I mean, yeah. I know people. There used to be all sorts of ducks and drakes when it comes to injuries. Yeah. But we used to get mail out of the clubs the next morning. Bang, this is what's happened. Mm. And to me, to be waiting until midday Tuesday to find out that Mumford's out for the year or to find out that he's a challenge. People were predicting, people were reporting that he was going to play this week.
Yeah,
how can it be such a dramatic change?
With an ankle recap, I'm sure he's had the scan. You might have had two different surgeons to give two different opinions on it. Because if it's going to be an ankle recap versus maybe just miss 3 weeks, there's a vast difference. So getting the opinions of more than one person in those situations.
I mean, I'll give you an example. Reece Stanley, who has a foot issue, which we don't know. Well, he's definitely not playing this week, but it could be a serious foot issue. And he's having to see a specialist, and we're having to wait. And I think the club's actually having to wait. They've got their fears, but they're not prepared to express their fears in case they're way wrong. And I suppose that's out of respect for the player as much as, you know, helping the fans actually get the information that they do deserve.
Particularly with betting being such a big part of the game as well. And we always hear about integrity and, you know, you have to put your phone in a box when you walk into the change room so it's all secure. Mm. I mean, we carry on with all that rubbish and yet we're hanging around waiting for injury news.
With injuries, maybe it's a failing in some respects, but I'm always careful because things are changing so quickly. Mm. Like, for instance, I saw Steve Johnson leave Geelong early this year on crutches. Mm. And tweeted out that he was on crutches, and Geelong said he had a corky, and he did have a corky.
Yeah.
But nowadays they actually put you on crutches to make sure you don't aggravate that corky.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a difficult area to report on unless you've got some medical knowledge.
We had Jared Waite wear a moon boot for 24 hours after a game earlier this year, and nothing wrong with it. It was just to offset some offline load in his foot, purely for that reason. Yeah. And the next day was fine walking.
But that's still the story. If you get, if I was to get a picture of Jared Waite, if we were with our camera crew outside North Melbourne, we got a picture of Jared Waite in a moon boot. That's still news.
No doubt.
Fans have Steve Johnson. Steve Johnson on crutch is still news, even though it turned out to be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Fans have a right to know that information as it breaks. Speaking of transparency, what's going on with Daniel Wells?
Yeah, he's going to be a little bit of time before he plays again.
What does that mean?
Well, I want to be transparent with you there, Matty. But it's just an injury at the moment that isn't allowing him to run a lot.
There's been some
or much at all.
There's been some. I know you can't speak for Daniel Wells, but there's been some talk that he's been reluctant to step up his training load.
Oh, well, that reluctance had probably come on the back of soreness. If he was not sore and there was no problems, he'd be training.
Do you think we'll see him again this season?
Yeah, absolutely, we will. Yeah, I'm really confident.
Mm. What do you think about the speculation, some people looking to write Daniel Wells off, Pete?
Well, I might be in the minority here, but I tend to take the view that it's difficult to be critical of people around their medical situation because unless you're actually... And some players can play through more pain than others. I mean, Prestia Giacomo was notorious for being ridiculous how much pain he could play through. And you do admire those players. So, yeah, look, the question of Wales is a difficult question unless you're inside his head. It really is.
Mm, we haven't seen him, of course, since round two.
Yeah.
And you could use him.
Absolutely, yeah, we could. He's the type of bloke that could split a game open.
Right, he's giving us nothing away. I'm doing my best, Drew Lowther. He's giving us absolutely nothing. He's giving us absolutely nothing. This is AFL Exchange, the number one AFL podcast on the planet. Thank you for making us number one. And by doing that, you go to the iTunes store, click 5 stars and write a little review in. We thank you for listening and thank you for downloading. We'll get to the fan survey in a moment, which has been published in the AFL Record. But first, one of the things that really got me riled up over the weekend was what happened in the last 2 minutes, particularly the last 41 seconds of the St Kilda Melbourne game. And the lack of professionalism from the Melbourne Football Club, the fact that Bernie Vince and his teammates thought that there was 3 or 4 or 5 minutes left, when in reality there was only 41 seconds left, just absolutely staggers me. Before we get the official club line from Pete Ryan,
his blood's boiling.
How does this happen?
Yeah, good question.
Could this happen at your club, or have you got processes in place so it doesn't?
It could, but it Well, of course it could happen, but you'd expect and you'd hope it wouldn't. I hear that the runner was out on the ground in that period when the... But what's the runner doing on the ground? I mean, if there was a minute... The other players, we usually get, time updates from the runner anywhere from probably no more than sort of 4 minutes. Yeah. The runner might come out and let, there's 4 minutes to go or 3 minutes.
So that's the point. There hadn't been an update for 3.5 minutes when they should have played.
So
they stuffed it up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that can happen.
That is unacceptable.
Well, it is unacceptable, but I was thinking about this as we've discussed, and we remember the Geelong not having a player behind the stoppage in that final in Sydney Swans when Nick Davis got through. I remember Collingwood on Anzac Day when Zaharakis, they squandered 3 goals and Mick said it was a disgrace to the Anzacs after the game. They went on. Then there was Richmond, that worst 90 seconds of footy. Like, this was a stuff-up, but there was so many things that happened wrong. Max Gawn's tap-out was ordinary. They were trying to restructure their forward line, so that was they were finding the footy in the back half, and I know that from on the bench they were trying to actually get players forward of the footy, and then all of a sudden they had to get players
but it shouldn't have been all of a sudden, because this is like...
I'm saying that's right, but I reckon that it's a process that a footy club goes through. From being very ordinary, which Melbourne has been.
Very ordinary.
To learning from the mistake. And as I think one of them said on one of the footy shows I was watching Monday night, you'd prefer to learn the lesson winning and getting away with it.
Yeah.
But they copped it in the most brutal fashion possible.
And Matty, that's your point here is you think we should have a countdown clock.
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think the time has come. I think it's just a pointless tradition that we don't have a countdown clock on the scoreboard. So the coaches can see in the coach's box. The guys on the bench can see.
Yes.
The people in the stands can look it up on their iPhone on the AFL Live app and see how long there is to go.
They can. I saw a few walk out of our game while sitting on the bench the last minute, and looked across to the centre wing and there were people leaving, so they knew how long was left.
Yep, you hear it in your ears in the radio if you're listening to the radio commentary. So everybody knows except the bloody players.
It's fantastic.
It's absolutely
that's
ridiculous.
Fantastic. Watch them make it's complete a professional fools sport. Of themselves.
Kick the bloody thing.
It's a professional sport, and this is just—it just smacks of. It's
nothing
idiotic.
To do with professionalism, Matt. It's about spectators watching the game.
But the spectators know how long there is to go.
So what? The players don't. It's great uncertainty in footy. That's what we want.
And the players still can find out.
Well, that's
message.
The point. So
they still can find out.
So we've got this antiquated system where a bloke needs to run around saying, "There's 2 minutes to go. Minutes to go."
It's great.
I mean, for crying out loud, just put it on the screen.
Yeah.
And then
would you have got the drama on Sunday?
You would still get drama.
No, you wouldn't.
And Melbourne might have won.
Melbourne would have had 12 players behind the ball. Pathetic finish. St Kilda would have had 15 behind the ball before Jeremy Howe kicked
that
the goal.
That is true. That is not a
and
bad
it
point.
It would have been absolutely appalling last 4 minutes of football. It's a joke, what you're suggesting. In fact, you're better than that.
What do you think? At AFL Exchange on Twitter, I'm prepared to get slammed for it, but I genuinely believe that we will get to a time when there is a clock on the screen.
Yeah, because people like you will carry on about it, and then someone such as Ian Collins or Paul Sargent will say, "Oh, we'll introduce the countdown clock at Etihad, and they'll be all heroic, and it'll ruin the game."
It won't ruin the game.
It will ruin close finishes.
It'll ruin the game.
It'll ruin them.
It will not.
So Jared Waite went back to kick that goal against the Swans, everyone would have thought he has to kick it because of the minute 30 to go.
Yeah, that adds to the tension.
Yeah.
No countdown clock.
Yeah.
It's an interesting discussion, but it doesn't sound like it's an argument I'm going to win anytime soon. But I reckon by the end of my journalistic career, which I hope is not next week, I'm hoping it's like a long way down the track, I reckon that the countdown clock will be in.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Do you think there's any chance of us going back to... All right, then. I mean, someone in our newsroom, I can't remember who it was, so you can name them if you can remember who it was, someone in our news desk, just before we leave this topic, did suggest that maybe we should just have a blanket rule. No one knows how long to go. But then you'll have, a bloke in the box dedicated to, working it out on a stopwatch. Yeah. It's going to... I mean, saying, let's take it off the TV and go back to the days of the five-minute warning, like what Channel 10 used to have, or the count.
Did you like that?
No.
Hated it.
Yeah.
Well, this is the point. No good. So it's okay for you to know the time, but it infuriates me that the players who are the ones actually playing the game don't know how long to go. It's stupid.
We'll take some sort of technology into their shorts.
Well, there you go. Now
maybe they could do that.
Could they all wear like wristband? I'm wearing a wristband here. Could they wear a wristband which had a countdown clock on the clock
rather than
on the wrist?
Rather than make a noise that the Kangaroos have on the scoreboard, they should put up this. Why don't they put something up there like 30 seconds or signal?
That would be a countdown clock.
That would just be silly. Some ad that the players
know. Blow a big horn in the stands or something. Yeah. So it's like a boxing.
Give James Brayshaw a horn and you get him to blow it out the.
I'll tell you what, you can see how fired up I am. I'm very angry about it. Very angry about it.
Oh, separate us.
All right, moving on. The AFL fan survey has been conducted for 2015. The results published in the AFL. Did you take part in the survey, boys?
Well, no. The thing that scares me after the rubbish you're talking about the countdown clock is that you might have actually taken part in the survey and it's influencing AFL decisions.
Did you? I did take part in the survey, but I cannot remember my answers for the life of me. So.
did we find out how many... We didn't find out how many people took part.
Thousands.
It was just online, was it? Purely online.
Yeah, AFL.com.au.
I think, actually, I don't know, but 16,000 is in the database, I think, of the AFL.
Oh, is that yes.
Yeah, I think.
But anyone can take part.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're all over the survey, aren't we? We sound really like we're well-informed about the results.
We know the methodology.
So we'll go through some of the results, and you guys can tell us if you agree.
Yes.
What's the best feature of the game? Do you think speed of play, high marking, one-on-one contests, goal kicking, or tackling?
I think I like to see the footy moving fast.
Yeah, so you're in agreement with the majority.
Yes,
36%
said speed of play. I hate the sideways, even though we do it sometimes, but I hate too much sideways, backwards, chipping, no good.
Do you agree?
I agree with that.
Most frustrating part of the game?
Well, I would say that the kicking to set up goals like it's a soccer game. So when
I'm not sure that was an option.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
Should have been. That's in next year's, Pete.
Slow play.
Oh,
and
right,
I'll tell you the example that I give is when they've got numbers back and a team has it across the sort of forward of centre and they start chipping around looking for a leading option, it just bores the bejesus out of me.
Blowouts won, 35.9%. Congestion, 30.3%. Congestion is annoying, but I don't know what we can do about it.
And what can we do about blowouts and uncompetitive games?
Well, I think we're getting less of them.
Yes.
I don't know if we have any. If we can get some data on that.
We're certainly having less of the 20. There's been 200-point-plus games this season, which is not bad.
And that lends itself to the question, what would you like to see more of in the AFL? And 47.1% of people said that they'd like to see more close games.
I agree with that.
And I think we all would. I mean, the close games are what makes it so great.
There's a bit of Der Fred about that, isn't there?
Yeah. If you added a countdown clock to that, that'd make it even better. Question 18 was an interesting one. Should the bottom four clubs each year be involved in a ballot for the number one draft pick? 62.4% said yes, and I could not agree more with
absolutely. That's a no-brainer for mine, Pete.
Yeah, I agree. I put yes.
So we either go in the ballot or, I mean, I really like the story that you had on AFL.com.au a few weeks back, the 666 fixture model.
Yeah.
I'd happily go to that, and that then we wouldn't need the ballot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with the bottom six teams playing for draft picks.
I think that's question 22, Matt, if you look ahead of the... That might be one of the questions, is it?
Once all teams have played each other once, the bottom six teams had their own playoffs to determine draft picks. And 30% said strongly opposed, 22% said opposed. That's alarming, isn't it? I'm disappointed in that.
No, it's not. You've got to look at it the other way, that 48% said they'd be quite happy for it.
So the glass is only slightly half empty.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's a jar. The door's ajar for that. Because it's early days, people are starting to think about it.
Do you reckon we'll see? I mean, because Pete's been covering this story closely. I mean, you broke it at the time on AFL.com.au and it caused headlines for 24 hours. It caused a sensation at the CEO's meeting.
Until they
kiboshed it. Momentarily. Mm. Is it still something, do you think, that headquarters wants to pursue in the longer term?
I do, I actually had a discussion with someone at a footy club this week who suggested 18 games, which I thought was a really good suggestion. And hear me out. That they'd have to play each other once and then they would be able to play the blockbusters twice, like the Eagles, Fremantle, or so on.
Yes.
And you'd actually... Matt's shaking his head, which is...
You're not in agreement. There's not much love between you two today.
No, I love Matt. But in terms of this particular issue, no. But anyway, I'm just
that's news that you're putting out there. That's good. That's good. I just think that that's an absolute joke because it's still a compromised fixture. It defeats the whole flipping purpose.
But it gets closer, Matt.
It does get closer. And I'm all about compromise.
Yeah. But the obvious hiccup is then you have the final four rounds and the final. So they were actually arguing that you reduce the season by four rounds. And so, therefore, you just go straight into the finals after 18 rounds.
10-team finals?
Well, you could do that.
Mm. It sounds like they want to change it, though.
They have to make it fairer, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a joke that Hawthorn and Essendon are playing for the second time next week.
We play the Cats in three games' time, and we played them 8 weeks ago.
Yeah, Richmond played Fremantle in about 3 or 4 weeks. Nah, it's just ridiculous.
It's not helpful.
But they'll say it's bringing more money in, won't they? Is that
I don't reckon it does, because who wants those rematches, particularly two Victorian-based clubs? You think, gosh, I was watching North Melbourne Geelong 6 weeks ago.
It does bring more money in the sense that it's the TV revenue, and it's nine games around, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I understand that. But they can still have the nine. The argument is less is more.
I agree. Well, in an ideal world, let's just have 17 rounds then. But that's not enough footy. So I think if we go 17 rounds, and then people need to get through the head. It's like a season, then a playoffs, then a finals almost.
I reckon the players would love 18 plus 4, wouldn't they? 4 less weeks.
Yeah.
Of course they would.
Oh, yeah, but the players wouldn't be happy to take a pay cut.
No.
So where's the money come from?
What about, I had someone mention this one to me over the weekend, what about having a three-game grand final series as opposed to the... And this stemmed from the argument that we play the grand final at the MCG. What happens if it's West Coast and Fremantle this year?
Mm.
Or, you know, down the track, if Fremantle finish on top we'll rubbish that idea. But that way, if it's, say, Fremantle-Hawthorn, then you get Hawthorn play at their home ground. Fremantle play the next one at theirs, and then the third game's always at the MCG. Because it's Hawthorn's home ground, the MCG, and if they play in the grand final again, they're playing at their home ground. So, I mean, what right do they have to play the game at their home?
I get the theory, but it has to be at the MCG.
The MCG is the home of football. It's like they play the FA Cup final at Wembley.
Play the second round of the grand final at the main stadium.
Well, yeah, having said that, they are going to build... We had this argument on the podcast a few weeks ago, didn't we? They're building Burswood.
Yeah, I know.
Which is going to be interesting. You'd be able to go to the casino.
But the three-game grand final series doesn't...
Yeah, it's interesting.
I think it's a really interesting talking point. I don't want to see it happen for the same reasons that you don't want to see the countdown clock happen. But, you know, it's not our sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised. Anything to...
The difficulty would be for supporters, particularly if you're travelling interstate, coming over for 3 weeks to watch your team for 3 weeks. That'll be hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they do it for... Yeah, anyway.
Should there be a standalone club in Tasmania? 80% say yes. So the follow-up question to that should have been, which team would you like to see relocate there?
I think they've got a good setup at the moment.
So
do I. That's my personal view.
So, I mean, I'd like to see a team in Tasmania too. I think if ultimately Greater Western Sydney doesn't succeed...
It'll succeed.
Well, there's your answer to that. Mm. The other question is, do we move to a 20-team competition?
No.
And then we could have a team in Tasmania and a third team in WA.
I think that having Hawthorn and North Melbourne in Tasmania is great. I mean, that's obvious, but Tasmania, it just has that flavour of... It's great that Tasmanian people can watch AFL footy live.
Is there anywhere else in regional Victoria that could sustain an AFL team?
No, I think the difference is that if you go to Launceston, I was there a couple of summers ago, there are Hawthorn jumpers everywhere. I'm sure since North Melbourne they're making some inroads in getting North Melbourne. And they identify with the team, whereas if you go to Ballarat, you've got generations of people who have grown up for Essendon, Geelong, whatever.
And the Western Bulldogs are in there now.
But they're not going to change to the Western Bulldogs.
Mm.
It's going to take a long time anyway. Whereas Tasmanians are quite happy to adopt a second team at least.
Yeah.
And eventually they become their first team.
And I guess the one thing that does work in their favour is that we always hear that Tasmania is a divided state on so many fronts. It's North versus South. So it's North versus South in a football sense too, with North in the South and the Hawks in the North.
Because then you get the argument of where they played their home games. Do they play half at Launceston, half at Hobart?
Or do you build a stadium somewhere in the middle?
There's nothing in the middle. No. I've driven from Launceston to Hobart. There's not much in the middle.
Except for beautiful country.
Oh, beautiful countryside, but there's not a city you can put a $25 million stadium.
73.3% of people reckon the sub rule should be abolished. I agree with that. That's going to happen, isn't it, Pete?
Well, you'd think so. The only counter is the doctors wanting some sort of discussion around the concussion sub and the impact of taking away the sub. I'd say that'd be the only impediment being taken away. Yeah. That they want to have that time and they think that it's good that you can replace a player, but I don't think it's enough of an argument.
It's not integral, is it? When we had the game for more than 100 years without it, 150 years without him. I think it'll be gone at the end of the year. Will that be a relief to the players?
Yes.
Geez, not being very expansive today.
Well, you asked the question, I gave an answer.
That's good. That's good. This is a great one. Question 34. Would you skip a friend's wedding if you had tickets to watch your team in the grand final? Very difficult question to answer because, in my view, it depends on who the friend is.
Yeah. Whether they're just you're getting a token invitation.
And who's playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was Richmond.
Oh, your team.
Yeah. Your team. Yeah.
I have not faced that, but I'm not sure I'd go to the wedding.
Isn't it a golden rule? Nobody
you shouldn't have
sets
a wedding
their
on
wedding
grand
for grand final day.
Yeah. 58.2% said yes, by the way. 32% said they'd try to get to both. And 9.8% said no, they'd go to the wedding. Preferred start time for the grand final, 76% say day. That's not a surprise, is it?
No.
14% say twilight. Is that enough moving towards the twilight from your perspective, Pete?
Yeah, I think so. I'm a fan of the night.
Oh, really?
But
I love the twilight prelim. The twilight prelim has been brilliant the past couple
of
years.
Hawthorn.
And I'd like to see... I think a twilight grand final could work a slightly later start. And I've even heard that the start time for this year's grand final may not be 100% locked in yet.
If you had a twilight grand final, would they allow an AFL reserves under 18 game beforehand?
Maybe. Well, they do play. They have got a game back there beforehand now, but it's still hours and hours before the game.
Yeah,
it's an under 18s all stars game.
Did I see you screw up your face at the thought of a night grand final, Drew?
Yeah, I don't like it.
Nightmare from a covering perspective, from a journalistic perspective.
Is it a 7 o'clock start? Is that what we're talking?
Yeah, it's probably 7:10.
Yeah, I'd rather happier day or twilight is a good option.
Which time slot do you least prefer when attending the footy? Talk us through these ones. Question 45, Pete.
There's obviously, do you want the nights? Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday Arvo, Saturday Twilight, Saturday night, Sunday Arvo and Sunday Twilight. And I answer the question as Sunday Twilight for me.
And 60% say that.
But isn't it all right to, after you've had a nice weekend, isn't to sit on the couch on Sunday afternoon? Because that's what most of us are doing.
Television, but we're saying attending the footy.
Attending.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're right. We're just attending. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
It's a home night.
Jack didn't want us to talk about this question, but I find it really interesting. Have you ever travelled interstate to watch your team play? 55% say they have.
Yeah, I have.
That's a lot.
Two great weekends at Byron Bay with friends. And then headed to the Gold Coast Metricon Stadium. Great weekends. And you take the bus you have a Esky sitting in the back and you have a designated driver and away you go.
You ever been the designated driver?
I was the designated driver on each occasion because I worked.
Oh, good on you.
So, no, it was fun.
There you go. There was a bit of a sledge for you, Jack. Sorry about that. bit inadvertent. Just wasn't highlighted on my page.
I've got to say, it's fun going interstate to watch
footy. Oh, it's awesome.
Or outside Victoria.
I went to the Gold Coast the year that... last year when the Tigers got beaten by three goals. Yep. But we had a great day at the Gold Coast. The Gold Coast is all... I think I'm getting sidetracked on the Gold Coast again. What's your preferred way of accessing footy news?
Well, just with these last two, Matty, you've just done... The AFL media is just doing a little bit of market research with this survey. That's why I highlighted these last two.
45.2% say online.
They do.
That's good to see.
Pete Campbell's ears pricked up when this answer was...
31% on mobile.
Yeah, he got us all to fill it out.
Yeah.
Just kept filling out question 48.
I'll tell you 48. What, radio and newspapers aren't very popular, are they?
No, well, I catch a train from Geelong, and I don't want to be too boring, but I do not see a newspaper, ever. People just don't read
them. MX is gone. People have their iPads and stuff?
They've got their iPads. They're all reading phones or iPads.
I was disappointed to hear, because Pete was telling me about his V-Line train experience the other day. They got rid of the catering trolley.
Catering trolley.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
What did they have?
Cheese twisties, pies, Big M's.
Yeah.
What would you like to see more of on AFL.com.au? I found this interesting.
More
too.
Market research. More.
More game analysis. Kidding. That's good for people like you, Pete, because that's your area.
It is.
How do you know that everyone took this? I suppose they had to get on AFL.com, didn't they?
That's true.
Interesting. I didn't even read that. Less stats. That's one article I write a week. Thanks for that.
But people want more news, so that's good. Yeah. I'm happy to keep giving them more news. Really interesting conversation there from the fan survey.
Yeah, it was.
What was your highlight?
I just like those last two.
Yeah.
That little bit of market research that you've just chopped in.
I was interested that Drew wouldn't play in a night grand final if North Melbourne made.
Oh, of course I'll play.
No, he's got to get late there first. Yeah, absolutely do. Game previews coming up on AFL Exchange. Let's get to an email now that's come in from Maury, who listens to us from Canada. Hello to you, Maury. G'day. I'm sure you'll be happy to hear from us. Living in Montreal in Canada. It's an interesting, I'm going to take the liberty of reading it out. It goes for a little while. So if you're using the podcast app, which has the skip forward button, and you're not interested in this, just skip forward a couple of minutes. Hi, Drew. It was addressed to you.
Was it? Or
it might have been addressed to Drew Lowther.
Drew Lowther, yeah, I think.
As a Canadian consumer of all things footy, I am bewildered by the obsession in footy with nicknames. I would say 98% of people in footy are referred to by their nicknames. It's like a secret club, and it can be terribly confusing to the uninitiated. I've noticed that by far the most common nickname is formed by adding Y to the name. Matty, Drewy, Roosie, Goodsy, Juddy, Hodgie, etc., etc. I find this unusual because in North America, nicknames are usually contractions of given names. Adding a Y makes the name longer. About the only name in footy I've come across that escapes the nickname craze is Jared. He points out he's never heard Jared Whateley or Jared Healy referred to by a nickname. But he says the irony is in America, well, that'd be shortened to Jerry. So what if your name ends in a Y? No problem. Gary Ablett is Gaz, so is Gary Lyon. Barry Hall is Baz. So why is Harry Taylor of the Cats or the former Harry O'Brien never called Haz? I personally think Harry O changed his name in part to avoid the nickname game. I have yet to hear anyone dare to refer to Reggie Lumumba as Mumbles. On we go. I thought I had detected another formula. Matthew Richardson is Richo, Mark Robinson is Robbo, Anthony Hudson is Hutto. Easy, right? But Mark Thompson is not Tomo, he's Bomber. And the clown prince of Channel 9, Craig Hutchison, is Hutchie. Curiouser and curiouser. By the way, I can only think of one person who bridges the two, the Y and the O. Jonathan Brown is Jono and Brownie. Then there are the initials, BT with Brian Taylor, JB with James Brayshaw. But why then is Brendan Goddard called BJ when his name begins with a G? There are, of course, the nicknames that you have no idea where they came from. Duck Chief, Horse Spud, Woosher, Sellers, and on and on. Good luck trying to figure out who's who if you are a casual listener. One final ridiculous example from Murray. Damien Hardwick is called Dimmer, but Damien Barrett is called Damo Purple Warrior and the Purple-Headed Warrior. Four nicknames. Really, does he have multiple personality disorder? Isn't one nickname enough? Can you see how bewildering this is to an outsider? There seems to be no rhyme or reason to it all. Cheers, Morris, in Montreal, Canada, in brackets, but you can call me Murray. Yeah.
Well, Murray, Tomo.
That was great. I was laughing to myself at home when I was reading that during the week. That was a great email. He's spot on, isn't he, about the nicknames?
Yeah, my big boss, Peter Campbell, who's, I guess, all of our bosses as well, made a point of saying to me, he's back on the nicknames when we were doing panel shows, particularly early days, because we want to make sure everyone's identified clearly. I'm very conscious of. I don't try not to use nicknames too much in my broadcasting, but it is very, very popular in this industry.
Yeah, it sounds blokey. Not many bloke, as in blokey, but it does sound blokey and matey. And
I mean, you get the Doyen, for example.
Yeah, but I'll tell you how I got the Doyen. It's not that interesting, but someone actually called me the Doyen on a panel show.
Right.
And when they got out of that, the boss blasted them for calling me the Doyen and said he's never to be referred to as the Doyen again. Yeah. And since that moment, I've been called the Doyen.
And as soon as someone says something like that, don't ever call that again. Yeah. Let's call him that again.
Unbeknownst to him, I've been called the Doyen ever since.
It's a bit of a bloody ego, isn't it? Yeah. Don't call him the Doyen.
Well, I think that was the whole point.
Well, how do the nicknames go? Does everybody have a nickname at your club?
Everybody has a nickname. Everyone.
Well, Alistair Clarkson, I saw him speak at the coaches' conference. He reckons that's one of the first things he does, is give someone a nickname to make them belong or feel like they belong.
It's interesting how people get nicknames. Luke Delaney, who now plays at St Kilda, his nickname was Car Keys, which has been shortened to Keys. Now, he earned that nickname because on his first day at the footy club in pre-season, it was the end of the day and most blokes had gone home, and then a text message come around from the footy club saying, has anybody got or seen Luke Delaney's car keys? So from that, we just called him Car Keys. It's Keys now, shortened for Keys.
Yeah, well, Clarkson did Junior McDonald, James McDonald. He gave him that nickname. I'm trying to think of some of the others. He basically gives every player in the footy club a nickname.
Yeah, it's a
great... way to do it.
Yeah. And he sometimes... Clarko does sometimes slip into nicknames in press conferences, and I've had to go, so who the heck's he talking about?
He called you. He gave you a nickname.
Yeah, gave me a nickname.
We still refer to him by that nickname. I reckon, though, the nickname has actually lost a bit since the great Lou Richards has no longer reported on football. Did you grow up with Lou Richards giving nicknames?
No, I didn't. Just
I'm a bit young for that.
Time. Right. Yeah. Well, he was a master at it. He gave North Melbourne players such as the Galloping Gasometer.
All right.
McMillan. Fantastic. And North had Duck, Horse. Who else? The Fridge.
Fruity.
They've got some great nicknames over there.
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
I'm just trying to think in our
Rene
office.
Kink, the Incredible Hulk.
We don't have that many nicknames in our office. Maybe we need to get some more. I mean, Jackie gets Mirrors, but that only comes from Drew. It hasn't really taken off.
Mirrors? I don't know yet. Mirrors.
There you go. Do you get Tomo? Or
just I get Tomo from Matty my schoolmates.
Yeah.
I get Matty T a lot these days. I used to get Tomo a lot at school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't get it so much since I've been working.
And do you get Peachtree, or what's that story?
I get Dish.
Oh, Dish, of course.
Dish.
Yeah.
Rico Laurentio gave me that my first year at North.
Did he?
You never got called Dish at school?
Never.
Maybe the
I got called Trev at school. That was my dad's name.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But did the kids you went to school with never do science? They didn't know what a Petri dish was?
Well, they probably did, but they never called me that.
Yeah, right.
The great Corey Enroy, who plays his 300th this week, is Boris. And he said during the week he hoped to get at Geelong and get a new nickname. But one of the blokes that he got drafted with knew him. So Boris has lived with him since he was five. No one calls him anything else but Boris. And the junior coach that used to coach him at Kimber Districts said he had a whole board of the team by nicknames, and he didn't know half the kids' names.
Crazy stuff. Nicknames. Thank you, Morris. Thank you, Maury. Appreciate your email. You can email us too. I don't know what the address is, but you can certainly find us on Twitter at AFL Exchange. I hope you're having a great day or night, wherever you are around the world. Thanks for listening. Time now for Petrie's Point, and we've been seeing that coaches like James Hurd, and you know, from others from time to time, you see coaching from the bench. We thought you might be able to give us an insight, Drew, into the why a coach would choose to coach from ground level as opposed to the coach's box.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and it's something we don't see too often. And Brad hasn't; he spent some time early in his coaching days coaching from the bench, but never a whole game, whether it's a quarter or a half or parts of a quarter, he'd come down to the bench. But the feedback I got about why coaches do that and come down and do the coaching from the sideline is pretty much when you have a young, developing team. And the result of the game isn't necessarily the most important thing on that day. It's more about developing your game plan, your game style, and teaching the players how you want them to play when you're the coach. So you can't have that direct face-to-face contact when a coach is up in the box. That's why they come down to the ground. So the pro of coaching from the sidelines is you can get that face-to-face interaction, especially for a young group. You can give them reassurance, and there's nothing better than having a conversation with the coach during the game, because they can certainly give you a spray, but they can give you encouragement, give you some reassurance. So that's the positive, and that's the reason why coaches would do it from the sideline. But the negative is, visually, you just can't see the game. And the game needs to be coached from that vantage point these days to see how it's unfolding, to see how, given 18 players are involved in the play every single moment of a game now, you need to be able to look at the field. And I know that when Dean Laidley was a coach, he didn't look at the footy and the tackle and the contest that was going on. He was always looking forward of the play and behind the play so that he was... sending messages down to the runner to instruct the guys ahead of it and behind it to do things, not just the guys around the footy. Yeah,
which now a coach relies on the line coach to actually be... So a line coach would be watching their defenders, for instance, to feed back information. So if the coach says, what's happening with that part of the ground, they know instantly.
So is it almost fair to say that if you're coaching from the boundary, you're not 100% in control? You can't be?
That's absolutely accurate. You can't. Your main priority when you're coaching from the bench is to speak to the players who are coming on and off the ground.
You can probably coach with a lot more empathy in terms of knowing where a person's at and have a direct face-to-face conversation. I remember Malthouse saying to Swan once, who Malthouse was coaching from the bench, so the story goes, and he said to Swan, "Who's tagging you?" And Swan said, Swan gave the name, and he said, "Well, he's doing a good job." Which is a great way to actually get the message across quickly.
I can't remember. Mick certainly would often, I'd say Mick come down to
he
the bench.
He comes with a couple of minutes to
quite
go.
Quite early, yeah. Earlier perhaps than some other coaches.
Go on, sorry.
No. I was going to just throw to you, Pete. I'm not sure when coaching from the box started versus, because once upon a time, didn't they all just sit on the bench?
They all just sat on the bench, and the great Ron Barassi actually used to send a guy in the late 60s when he took over at Carlton. He sent a guy in to queue up early at the MCG, in the member stand, and reserve a seat so Barassi could sit up there and have a communication through a walkie-talkie or whatever it was, down to the bench. And then it took off, and then they eventually built the coach's box that we grew up watching at the MCG.
Have you ever heard Kevin Sheedy tell the story about how they forgot to put the coaches' boxes into Etihad Stadium when they built it? He loves telling that story, and he reckons he's the one that he went out there when he went on the tour, and he's going, "Where's the coaches' boxes?"
They're on the half-forward flank, which they should be on the wing.
Exactly. I know there's better vantage point than where they are. So in summary, the coaching from the bench is to help develop players who you've got a young team, you might be a new coach. It's to get the interaction. It's to get the players understanding their roles, but against is the fact you can't see the game and you can't have full control of the game.
So final question to you, Pete Ryan, then on that. Hurdy's pretty much conceding defeat, isn't he, if he's coaching from the bench?
Well, he's taken the approach that he needs to be having a direct communication to his players, which, given the experience of the group, is debatable.
Petrie's points with assistance from Pete Ryan this week.
That was great, Pete. You can come in next week.
Really good point, bang on the end there.
Next week we call it Pete and Petrie's point.
You're listening to AFL Exchange. Drew Petrie is here, Peter Ryan is here, Matt Thompson with you as well. AFL Exchange for round 12. Time to get stuck into the match previews, and it all begins on Thursday night. We were saying off the top how much we love Thursday night football, at least Pete and I do. Adelaide and Hawthorn at Adelaide Oval. The bounce of the ball is at 7:20 local time, so that's 7:50 for viewers back in Melbourne.
Both of these teams coming off the bye. So I wonder if there will be any sort of sleepiness in that first quarter. Often that can be the case. Hawthorn going along pretty nicely, even though they're not in the ladder position that I think they'll end up in at the end of the year. They're sixth on the ladder at the moment, but they've won the most quarters for the year, Hawthorn.
Yeah,
so it's surprising.
They've got a percentage of 155 or something ridiculous.
It is. It's massive. It is 155. Yeah, you're spot on, Pete. It's so it is surprising they're almost not higher up the ladder, but that'll come in the second half of the year. The game, well, I think it does start in the middle, but Dangerfield and Sloan are their two ball winners who have been able to get it forward the most for Adelaide this year. And if Hawthorn can keep it in their front half, I think it would be really important and not allow Walker and Betts to get involved in the game as much. Go a long way to helping Hawthorn win the game.
Yeah, no doubt about that. It's a massive game for Hawthorn. Absolute must. Oh, well, they're all must wins. But this is they've blown a couple of games early, and if they don't win this, then they really come off the bye and well and truly behind the eight ball.
And they're buzzing at the Crows, aren't they, after re-signings of Sloan, also Richie Douglas. I mean, the Dangerfield question continues to linger, but he's in good form.
And they can crowd. If they can get the ball out of the centre regularly, Adelaide, their forward press has been pretty strong, particularly it was early in the year, and you imagine they come out after the bye with a renewed focus and an energy to actually have that press. I still think Hawthorn will win.
You look at the next few games for Hawthorn, and they've got, after Adelaide, they've got Essendon, which they should win, but then they've got Collingwood, Freo and Sydney. Not that there's an easy one these days, as we continually say, but that's a fairly tough 5 weeks of football coming up.
I'm going to go for Adelaide.
Hawthorn.
Let's turn our attention to Richmond and West Coast at the MCG. Jeremy McGovern did board the plane for the West Coast Eagles. There had been a really big question mark over whether or not he would play against the Tigers, knowing how undermanned they've been down back. And they've done a remarkable job, the Eagles, really, in challenging circumstances so far this season. While the Tigers are primed with Griffiths, Vickery and Revolt, it's going to be a fascinating game, this one, to see exactly what happens.
Yeah, and we saw how dominant those Richmond forwards were against Fremantle when Michael Johnson went down and really stretched Fremantle's back line and allowed Vickery and others to get a hold of them.
It's been a critical move, actually, because earlier on in the year, correct me if I'm wrong, but they weren't playing the three forwards.
Yeah.
They were playing Griffiths, Vickery and Riewoldt, which probably Griffiths and Vickery are, every second week sort of players, but if they're getting a third defender, they're a much more damaging player. And they also allowed Riewoldt to roam and have someone to kick to when he gets the ball, because he's a great footballer.
Well, obviously. And you guys know way more about the game than me, but it had long been a talking point, hadn't it, whether or not Richmond could actually have the three of them there. But they seem to be able to.
Well, there's just weeks that applies.
Yeah.
The three works, and there's other weeks that it won't. So sometimes players aren't necessarily dropped in a sort of black and white fashion. It's just matchups.
Yeah, that's true. But Richmond have changed their game style according to what we see. They're moving the ball a lot more slowly, particularly off the back of the game they lost to you guys in Hobart.
Yep.
And they've been much more conscious in the way that they move the ball forward and picking targets.
They've won four in a row after that loss to us, Daniel, Hobart.
And the Eagles haven't beaten Richmond since 2012. That's another stat, I guess, in the Tigers' favour. The Tigers currently 8th and the ladder. The Eagles 3rd, 8-3, as opposed to the Tigers 6-4. But as you say, those four straight wins have done so much for the Tigers' confidence. So it's a hard one to tip, isn't it?
I think it is, but I think Richmond.
Yeah, Richmond. Matty, and you're
West
going
Coast
for
haven't done
I'll
much
go
wrong.
For the
going for the Tigers.
Carlton and Port Adelaide. This game is at 1:40 at the MCG on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, Carlton spoke about the sides with the most, had won most quarters. Carlton are the lowest, equal lowest. They've only won 10 quarters for the season. They're the equal lowest with the Brisbane Lions. I don't really hold much hope for the Blues, unfortunately, this week. I think Port have got a better side. We haven't seen their best form yet.
Port need the win. It should be an easy scalp for them, really, shouldn't it?
I think it will be. As simple as that.
Yeah, Port will win.
GWS and North Melbourne, with all those injuries, this certainly changes things up. We keep on hearing the rhetoric coming out of Arden Street saying, injuries, what injuries at GWS? Oh. They don't mean much at all. They're really a talented side. I mean, they're bringing in some really important really good players. They're not going to be easy at all.
Well, you know what? They're not going to be. And I did make the point at the beginning of the show, they've got 17 first-round draft picks. They'll bring back Aiden Corr this week to play the back line. Their back line, yes, it's going to be a bit young, but you've still got Heath Shaw down there. Ryan Griffin might play half back. So
they were so in the game up until half time against Collingwood.
Yeah.
If they'd kicked straight, they should have been 3 or 4 or 5 goals up.
Mm, they had the footy 7 times in forward 50 in the first 13 minutes. So I think Collingwood's 2.
Yeah, right.
And they'd kick the first 3 or 4 of that second
North
quarter.
North Melbourne's not going unbelievably well, all due respect. So I reckon the injuries hurt enough that North Melbourne should win.
No Mummy, no Giants?
I reckon it's almost close to that. They're definitely a weakened unit.
Yeah, I don't think it's as simple as no Mummy, no Giants. I think the other ones as well. Just a stat, when GWS lose, they lose big. They're the second worst, well, they get the second biggest margins when they lose, 48 points. When they have a loss. And that happened on the weekend in that last quarter when Cloak kicked 4 and
they got a hole with
those injuries.
I think the other thing to talk about North briefly is Goldstein is in absolutely ripping form, and it would have been great to watch him against Mumford. But he should be able to really use the advantage of no Mumford.
Have you played at Spotless before?
Yes.
What do you make of it?
We played there once. It was 2012. It's a really big ground, like from the boundary line to the fence is like another 8 or 9 metres, and it seems really just a massive big paddock. It's the surface was fine. It's almost like you're playing in the middle of nowhere. You kind of are. So all those, I guess, aesthetic things, it's different. But once the ball bounces, you don't think of those things. Do you like the venue?
No, I was just interested to know what you think, because we don't know much about it. They only play there really 8 times a year or something. They split their games with Canberra.
Yes.
I think it's a good venue. They want to play finals up there, which is interesting.
At that stadium?
Yep.
What's the capacity?
25,000.
Yeah.
Well, you'd rather play finals at that stadium than an ANZ, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think it's a fine idea, but I'm not sure the AFL is that excited.
Where's the AFL want to play
them? SCG.
Want to play as Giants finals at the SCG?
I'm not sure, actually. But really? They want to play them away from Spotless. It could be ANZ.
Oh, that'd be ridiculous. It's something we should, but that might be in the contract for another year or two. Yeah. But it's something we should look into. It could be a story in that. And also, I think that it's going to be interesting to see how the Giants crowds hopefully improve with their performances now that they've started to, you know, notch a few wins together. I'm hoping there's quite a good crowd there to watch them take on you guys at 4:35 Sydney time on Saturday afternoon. Although there is a shower or two predicted. We know the Sydney fans don't like going out in the rain.
The weather reports.
Well, they're online on afl.com.au. We have it in the top right corner of the Carlton Draft Match Centre. The Western Bulldogs and the Brisbane Lions. This is Saturday night at Etihad Stadium.
Another game where both sides are coming off a bye.
Yep.
They've had a week to recover. Brisbane Lions, or just, Western Bulldogs will be, they're just a far better side at the moment.
Went and watched them train yesterday. Bontempelli did some just handball drills. Pickin didn't see him, but...
Yes.
Yeah, hopefully they'll play, but they're critical players.
Yeah, they are. I did a sportsman's night with Bontempelli, Marcus Bontempelli, a couple of weeks, a week ago.
Yep.
Good young man.
He is
very impressed.
Man. Great player.
Very level-headed, grounded guy.
Yeah, good. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Bulldogs, easily, I'd say.
So it's not a case of no Bont, no Bulldogs?
No, it's not.
I just wanted to use that headline. Yeah.
Brisbane are getting a few players back, but they also lost a few.
Yeah, they have. I looked at their injury list. Yeah. If you've got a 5 minutes, go to the afl.com.au and look at the injury lists. And I counted about 15 players on their injury list.
Very easy to get to. Just go /injuries.
Mm. Bang, there might have been a couple that are tests or that might return this week, but it was a long list.
Yeah.
Right, so everyone tipping the Bulldogs.
Yep.
And the final match of the round is on Sunday. Standalone game on Sunday with the Gold Coast, Sydney, Essendon, St Kilda, Collingwood and Fremantle all having the weekend off. It's Geelong and Melbourne at Simmons Stadium, 3:20, the bounce of the ball.
There's one other game, Community Cup, Recklink.
Oh,
St Kilda. Yeah, Adelaide's playing at half time.
Oh, great.
Yeah, the great Geelong product, Adelaide. Anyway, Geelong should do this in a canner for Corey Enright's 300th game.
Melbourne last won at Cardinia Park back in 2005, and in that game, the players that played in that game, there's no one left for Melbourne playing AFL football, but Geelong have Bartel, Stevie J, Kelly, and Gaz Juniors at the Gold Coast. There's a bit of information for you.
Well, we all remember round 19, 2011, when it was 37-11, 233 to 7-5.
I think the scoreboards caught fire that day. It was such a big number. I couldn't handle it.
I was there that game. Jared Rivers was playing for Melbourne, now plays for Geelong.
Yeah.
Crazy.
How good was Blitzarves last week?
How good is Blitzarves? He could win a Brownlow.
Whoa! No. Put that in the vault.
No, he's that sort of player.
He was very good last week.
Yeah.
He was very good last week.
Very good.
All right, let's go around the table and wrap up the show with your person of the week, and it's a big week for Pete Ryan. You're the guest, so your person of the week?
Rory Sloan for re-signing, recommitting to the Crows.
Corey Enright in his 300th game. Well done.
Mine is J.R. Smith of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Have you seen the Funky Duck?
Yes.
It's the hands-free Segway that he gets around on as he's travelling to and from the stadium, literally from his car, I think. Google it. It's just hilarious, and I want one.
What is it again? The
J.R. Smith's the player from the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah.
They lost game six.
They did.
And in turn, the NBA championship on Wednesday, Tuesday their time. And on his way out of the stadium, out of the locker room, he's on the Funky Duck, which is the hands-free server. And he's just hilarious. You've got to Google it.
Yeah.
It's seriously...
What's his name?
J.R. Smith.
J.R. Smith on the Funky Duck.
Yeah. And it's P-H. That's how you spell funky. P-H-U-N, away you go. So you'll be able to find that. J.R. Smith and the Funky Duck, my person of the week. Big week for Pete Ryan.
Well, Drew's already mentioned him, but Corey Enright is having a huge week. Congratulations to you, Boris.
Big week four is meant to be the negative one.
Oh, is that right? Mm. Oh, okay. Come back to me.
Come on, Doyen.
Yeah, sorry, mate.
I think it's a big week for the sides coming off a bye. I know that there's two games with... Both sides have had the bye, but just to see if the bye should freshen you up. But maybe that freshening up we won't see till next week.
My big week for Clarko's bus driver. He's got a very important job to get him from the stadium back to the hotel.
Well, that's
tomorrow
right.
night. Just it's his return
we
to Adelaide.
Over that, didn't we?
We know that he had an interesting experience last time. He said if he was to walk, he would wear a bicycle helmet, but he's not going to walk.
I'm not sure why he needs a bicycle helmet, given probably people in the vicinity might have been the ones more in danger.
Ooh.
He's going to catch the bus, and good luck to Clarko's bus driver. Just make sure you return him to the hotel safely.
I've found someone.
Yep.
whoever's looking after the bench for Melbourne down at Cadinia Park on Sunday, they have to regroup and hit back hard.
Absolutely. And just keep an eye on the time. I mean, it can't be that hard.
They should be watching those blokes as security come out. They should have known 5 minutes.
Well, that's why everyone knows. Yeah. Everyone knows the yellow coats at the MCG coming out. There's another reason.
Yeah.
Bertie, what were you doing? Oh. All right, that'll do us for AFL Exchange. You're off to a really important meeting, apparently.
I am. Players Association board meeting tonight.
Is there going to be any news out of that?
Oh, there might be.
Make sure you let us know.
All right.
Make sure you keep clicking back to afl.com.au for all the latest news as it breaks 24/7. Pete Ryan, thank you for being here in place of Drew Lowther. It's been fun.
I loved it.
Cheerio to Drew, who's on assignment over in Adelaide. And good luck to you.
Thanks, Matt.
In Sydney against the Giants. And that is it from us. Enjoy the footy.